66 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
AP News, I'm Ben Thomas. Massive winter storm is expected to bring blizzard conditions to the Rockies, Northern Plains, and Midwest. Forecaster David Roth at the National Weather Service.
Moderate to heavy snow, as well as high wind. So that'll restrict visibilities to near zero, which will make travel nearly impossible.
Farther south, thunderstorms with heavy rain.
There could be flash flooding. This would include cities like Memphis, Shreveport, New Orleans, Jackson, Birmingham, Atlanta.
A former Libyan intelligence official accused of making the bomb that brought down Pan Am Flight 103 appeared in federal court in Washington on terrorism charges. 259 people in the air and 11 on the ground were killed when the plane exploded over Lockerbie, Scotland in 1988. In another D.C. court, a trial is underway for four Oath Keepers members on charges of seditious conspiracy related to the storming of the U.S. Capitol. And one of Pennsylvania's largest drillers is being allowed to extract natural gas again from underneath a community where it was accused of polluting the water supply.
The Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection quietly lifted its long-term moratorium on gas production in Dimrock, a small village in northeastern Pennsylvania. The community gained national notoriety when residents made videos of themselves lighting their tap water on fire. The agency's agreement with Houston-based Coterra Energy is dated November 29th, the same day Coterra pleaded no contest in a high-profile criminal case accusing the company of allowing methane to leak uncontrolled into Dimrock's aquifer. One drilling opponent says Dimrock residents, in his words, got played. I'm Norman Hall.
The Environmental Protection Agency says fuel economy for 2021 model year vehicles in the U.S. stayed flat, 25.4 miles per gallon the average. Still, that's the record. This is AP News.
Girls and boys in poverty around the world are dreaming of a better life, filled with dance, art, music, and knowledge. They dream of a brighter future with enough nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn and grow, to get an education, escape poverty, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, such dreams are coming true. Together, we give children a chance to set their sights high and succeed in school and in life by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and so much more so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today. Together, we can help end poverty for good.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingram Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. only on WAUK 540 a.m. 101 FM, The Shaw.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt US Kids, and the Ad Council.
What is dedication?
People ask, how your children learn how to ride a bike and you didn't. I just created an environment where they taught themselves and all I had to do was be there.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. There's a $50,000 reward for information connected to Friday night shooting death of a postal carrier in Milwaukee. The FBI has joined state and local authorities in the investigation. Authorities last we knew were looking for a silver Audi SUV with tinted windows and that the suspect should be considered armed and dangerous. The Republican Party of Wisconsin has a new leader and a new fundraising strategy. Brian Schimming was elected as state party chairman over the weekend. Schimming will be the first paid Wisconsin GOP chair. Republicans are trying to counter the fundraising advantage Democrats have enjoyed under a paid statewide chair. Foxconn has qualified for more than $8.5 million in tax credits and subsidies. The Evers administration says Foxconn created almost 770 jobs and spent more than $77 million on its plant near Racine. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 548. Miss a minute.
It's time for The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Tis the holiday season. Everybody getting ready for the big banks, the big season. Charity on the minds of, well, at least South Carolina Senator Tim Scott. And I got to tell you, as I was reading Tim Scott's thread on charity today, my view, he was chosen for this message. He points out that Americans give seven times as much as Europeans to charity, twice as much as Canadians give to charity. He goes on to say the Philanthropy Roundtable credits our unique history and character, including strong social conscience and spiritual faith. So we're better than all those other countries because, you know, we've strong social conscience and of course, faith, of course. He says it's so inspiring to see that Americans turn to their faith to step up and help those less fortunate. Despite what you may hear in the media, our faith is what drives us forward as a country and a community. Now, he links to a study that was done last year on charitable giving and the amounts, and there's a whole bunch of, and it's a really good, interesting little bit. I tweeted it out earlier. There's a lot of little tidbits in there that kind of says, you know what, charitable giving has been falling off. Fewer people are attending church, but hey, it's our strong faith. That's the reason that we give seven times as much to charity than those Europeans and double what those nice people up in Canada give. And as I read this, my mind went to this place of going, you know, no, that's not it. That's not it at all. It has a lot to do with the fact that in those countries, don't need as much charity. They have a social safety net. When they get sick, you know what they don't do? They don't put up GoFundMe accounts to pay for the doctor bills. Do you know how many GoFundMe accounts I saw last year of people who go, I wasn't expecting to get sick and my health insurance doesn't cover anything. Can you help me out with $5? How many of those I saw? How many did you see? We're a country that gives more to charity because the need is pretty damn high. Basic things we do for charity. You remember all during the Iraq War and Afghanistan, there were people holding bake sales to get soldiers the armament and the flak jackets and the coverings for the Humvees. And we were holding bake sales. And we fund the military like nothing else. We were literally taking up charitable events to fund the most expensive military in the history of civilization. What do you think we do for children? What do you think we do for those veterans coming back? I had this long conversation just before showtime with a relative who was busting my shoes about Georgia and, you know, about Reverend Warnock and, you know, Herschel Walker, you know, and I'm going, you know, you're the Christian here. You're the one who family values. And yet I'm struggling. And she's like, well, why would you support Warnock? I go, because, you know, he talks about feeding the children, he talks about, you know, sheltering the homeless, you know, those veterans that we do all these performative things at sports events for. Maybe if we, I don't know, just spitballing here, maybe if we took some of the energy that we put into making it look like we support the troops and actually do that, maybe we'd be better off. Maybe we wouldn't need so much charity. And this has been a struggle for me for a long time because we do donate to charitable causes and we do want to help our neighbors and we want to do all this, but we shouldn't have to. And this is where I come back to my belief in government. My belief in government is it's how we do collectively the things that we can't do individually. We can't pave roads individually. We can't educate a populace. We can't provide health care for everyone, national defense. Lots of things that we individually cannot do. And hunger, one of those things. And homelessness, one of those things. Take care of our seniors, yeah, one of those things. Should it be up to charity? Should it be up to the goodwill of others to decide, oh, hey, we're going to help you because we feel good about it. Look, charity's great. Give to your favorite charity. I hope you do. In fact, you know, the most important days for giving are coming up December 30th and 31st. Yet the report says one of the least chosen reasons for charity is tax deduction, which I find to be BS, but you know, December 30th and 31st are the most important days for charitable giving. I wonder why. Last 2 days of the year, just to get in before the tax breaks, just thrown out here. But here's the thing. People like Tim Scott, who's going to talk about charity, but not talk about jobs. Oh, isn't it so wonderful? We give people charity and then beat them up for taking that charity. You know, I had a conversation with somebody, you know, while I was in Georgia about people using the EBT cards. And I'll tell you, you know, in my lifetime as a kid, I used food stamps and it was the most humiliating thing of my life because here we're saying as a society, here we want to help you. Here's the charity. Then while society, you know, beats you over the head and humiliates you for needing it. It's not like that in every other country. Here, yeah. Handouts are only good for people who evidently don't need them, like corporate America. We use lotteries to fund essential things. We have corporations do little book things to fund schools. I mean, in my kid's school for years, you had, you know, like Pizza Hut and Pepsi and, you know, all of these big corporations who are advertising to our children so that we can get bare necessities in the classroom, and we call that charity. It's not charitable giving. It's propagandizing. But it really hit home here a couple years ago. Here in Pennsylvania, we were talking about hocking off the lottery. They had a couple of bidders. They were trying to sell off the lottery because they needed a short-term fix of cash. And a company from the UK wanted to buy it. And I remember the testimony like it was yesterday. The woman who was testifying was asked the question, you know, what in the UK, what do you use the funding for? Because the person who asked the question said, here in the state of Pennsylvania, we use the proceeds from the lottery to fund programs for seniors. You know, essential care functions for our seniors. You know, the most vulnerable. You know, the precious past generation in their golden years, we use a vice. We use somebody's vice to fund. Now, in the UK, they don't do that. In the UK, they use it for arts and humanities. They use it for carnivals and circuses. They use it for betterment, not baseline. They use it for high-minded stuff, not bare necessities. This is where we've got it wrong. We've given all these wealthy people all this money. And what's interesting is they don't even give all that much charity. The people who gave the most, people making less than 50 grand. The highest percentage of their income, people less than 50 grand. because they know what it's like to need. They're the ones who are funding those GoFundMe when the neighbor needs $5 from 100 people to pay the doctor's bill. They know what it's like to go without, to be poor, to be struggling, and to not have a safety net help them out. But hey, Tim Scott, you know, he's praising us for being, you know, a good spiritual, unique country. Kind of reminds me of George Bush. Remember when George Bush was running for president and a woman stood up and said, you know, I've got three jobs, and she was going on to tell the story of how she's struggling to make ends meet, and he cut her off right at the knees and said, three jobs, you do that? That's uniquely American. And he was right. That is uniquely American. To have to work three jobs just to make ends meet and still not have health insurance, still not have retirement security? Yes, uniquely American. So, Tim Scott, when you talk about charity, maybe be a little, I don't know, less disingenuous and propping us up as we're number one. We give so much to charity. Why? Because, again, the need. What government used to fund, you and your party have taken away. That safety net that people used to not fall through, you and your party have destroyed. Just kind of throwing it out there. I'd love to hear your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. Do you give during the charitable season, which would be all year long, or just, you know, during the holidays when we're feeling a little bit better, you know, as Christmas is coming around, you know, we're a little looser with the pocketbook. At least that's what the story tells. Evidently, March, April, and May are the leanest months for the nonprofits and the charitable giving. I guess everyone's trying to pay off the holiday bills. But I'd love to hear your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. Do you have a story? Because I'll tell you, I the one that sticks in my mind, and it'll probably on my deathbed will be the one that makes me the angriest. And I was like 8 or 9 years old. Going to the local Bilo. It was what kind of a grocery store we had in the projects. And had the clown money. And I was going to buy, you know, a couple of things that my mother wanted, plus a Nutter Butter bar for a nickel. Still remember that. And this woman made just the most federal case out of it. I mean, a huge, you know, can they buy these with this? And everybody in the, you could just feel the stares. And which is why, you know, I have a timer to put people in their place when they make those comments about someone else. Because how dare you? How dare you offer help and then berate someone for that help while telling ourselves we're a Christian nation who's number one in charity? It's obscene. I do want to hear your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. Your thoughts on the other side of the break. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. Working people, come to talk.
If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in 2 segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. This holiday season, are you planning on giving to charity? And do you have a favorite charity?
I always like big brothers, big sisters. It's something that did really well by me. I also like giving to the local charities who are doing work, getting gifts to families and that. I want to hear your thoughts as well. Let's go to Tom in Oregon on line one. Tom, how are you today?
I'm doing just fine. How about yourself?
I can't complain. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to throw out there that everyone can do it. You know, I've been going to my local grocery store and the Roundup option and how everyone can just give for less than a dollar every time they go to the grocery store to support local charities. It's not hard, and, you know, we get give back to the community that we get to be a part of, you know?
Yeah, if that's your way of giving to charity, then good on you for doing it.
And, you know, everyone else can jump on board, too, and you get hundreds and hundreds of people going to a grocery store, and if everyone gives, you know, 50 cents, 75 cents, a nickel or whatever, that all adds up.
No, it's a good point. And maybe they could help the families in the community with cheaper groceries.
And that's the goal. And that's how you, you know, let another family to, you know, buy their Christmas dinner or whatever, and so they don't have to worry about that, and then they can give their kids a wonderful Christmas, you know, give them an extra present or two.
Good stuff. Appreciate it, Tom. Thanks so much.
Yep.
During the holiday season, a good idea. Let's go to Alice on line three. How are we doing today, Alice? What's on your mind?
Oh, I'm doing well. Well, I'll tell you what. When I do any charitable giving, I try to do things for people, local people that I know that need help. And I donate time to the food bank with helping get together the boxes and whatnot.
No, that's great. I'm more of a local, you want to get involved with your local charity, give to your local food bank, you know, that kind of stuff, your local homeless shelter to make sure that, you know, to try and help your local community, because I always say you want to change the world, start in your little piece of it. And for me, that's where I go. You know, Tom's idea is not a bad idea. I personally don't, because I'm not going to give corporate America the ability to, you know, to make themselves look better. But I'm not against people doing it. It's not a bad idea.
No, it's not. But that's what I do. And I think this is my take on things. I'm not going to donate to the church or anything like that. I'm going to donate to people I know that are needful. But you guys have a nice holiday season.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Alice. Appreciate it. I see someone on the street. You know, anytime I walk around in a city, I always got $3 in my pocket. The first three people who come up to me, I give them a dollar to help them out. That's a small bit of charity local. But here again, you know, when you look at the bigger problems, the homelessness, the hunger in this country, it's got to come from, you know, charity. I'm sorry, you know, we waste so much money raising money where we should just be going, you know what, we can solve these problems. But great thoughts. Want to hear yours, 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. As you know, I've always said Ronald Reagan was not wrong. The best anti-poverty program is a job, and I've amended that to being a union job. My fear is we're heading a direction where the billionaires have had enough of our protests, enough of our wanting to organize and wanting them to pay their share. I look at what happened today out in San Francisco. Elon Musk fired four of the Twitter cleaners who cleaned the office buildings. Evidently, for the last couple of weeks, evidently since Elon Musk took over Twitter, the people who clean the offices and, you know, clean the floors and clean the toilets and all this, they've had security guards, you know, escorting them all over doing their jobs. Well, today, fired all of them, and they will be replaced by robots, evidently. And this is one of those things where you go, you know, this is kind of the future. This is kind of like that one little moment where you go, is this what's going to happen across the spectrum? Now, understand, you know, Musk has fired almost half of the employees at Twitter. Now, granted, you know, Twitter is a mess right now. And, you know, there's going to be, you know, chaos for a while because it's about destroying Twitter and turning it into a right-wing hate machine. But, which, you know, it's getting there. But, you know, he's defending himself. Also, here's the part that I found interesting about the BBC story. Musk's in trouble in San Francisco as well, because evidently they've put bedrooms in their San Francisco headquarters. Now, the Department of Building Inspectors are investigating because they've installed these bedrooms for workers in the bedrooms. And now, again, you know, he's saying, "No, this is good of me. I'm providing beds for tired employees because I want them to work 100 hours a week. We're going back to sweatshops." But he's going to provide a bed for everyone, I guess. Or maybe you can share. Which, again, makes you go, what exactly is the future of the working class in this country? Now, did I mention that these janitors were union janitors? And that the union, SEIU Local 87, said that they're probably laid off because they're union workers because of how much Elon Musk hates union workers. And I don't know that I disagree with that. This, again, another one of those power play moments. And isn't it interesting how much, you know, people loved Elon Musk on the left because he was a genius. I never was on the Musk train. And now how much they are not fond of what a billionaire with the kind of power, control, and resources, what they can do. And for me, this is a moment. And I want you to keep an eye on this in the new year, because this is, I think, the billionaire class, the wealth class, the corporate class, I think they're tired of us. I think they're tired of working people. I think they're tired of hearing about how bad they are. And they're going to just start cracking down. They're going to start firing people. They're going to start cutting benefits, cutting wages. The new year, I don't think, is going to be great. I think the billionaire class, who we've given so much wealth and so much power and have a dysfunctional government that can't and won't hold them accountable, I think we're in for an interesting year. Because this kind of stuff is going to happen more and more. And who's to stop them? You? Me? Corporate America dominates virtually every portion of our lives. You know, I know everyone's, oh, Joe Biden raised inflation. Joe Biden has a magic switch. Joe Biden's a socialist, therefore prices went up. And I'm going, explain that one to me. I just had a relative explain to me that, you know, Joe Biden did all this stuff. The tube of toothpaste is $9 because of Joe Biden. I'm going, how? How is that possible? It just is what it is. And it's our angering and it's frustrating. Lastly, I want to get to in this segment, Stellantis. There's a plant in Belvidere, Illinois, where the Jeep Cherokee was being built. I guess still being built for the moment. They're going to be shuttering that plant, shutting it down, firing all those workers on February 28th. I guess they could have done it two weeks earlier and done it on Valentine's Day. I guess that was nice of them, waiting 2 weeks after Valentine's Day. The 1,350 employees there indefinitely laid off, or in worker terms, fired. Now, the company says that, well, you know, I'm going to try maybe find them jobs elsewhere. They're blaming supply chain shortages and lack of demand for Jeep Cherokee. Their sales are down 61% year to date. They're also saying the biggest switch is, well, you know, we're going to the electrification, which means what? Oh, yeah, they're moving production. They're moving production to Mexico, which is what they did with the Jeep Patriot, you know, which I thought I had for 11 years, which was a great car. I loved that. They got rid of it. They brought in that Renegade, which was made where? Oh, yeah, Mexico. So quickly, they're moving all of the full-time work out of this country to cheaper labor countries. And again, our trade deal's bad. We need people who are going to stand up for working people. But is it a surprise that this happened? No. Is it a surprise it happened just before Christmas? Oh, no. Because this is what happens. So, Tim Scott, if you want to talk about charity, how about we redo the TAA, the Trade Adjustment Assistance, so workers like this who are losing their job because they're outsourcing their jobs can at least get a little bit more unemployment, a touch more, and get a little job training to help them transition? Maybe just a little bit, just a thought. You want to talk about charity, Tim Scott? How about charity beginning at home with these workers? How about that? Or do we have to beg and plead with the wealthy to give us pennies? Is that where we are? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Got lots to get to, lots to talk about. Angering. Remember, check out the podcast.
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
Capital Riot, I'm Ben Thomas with an AP News Minute. After seditious conspiracy convictions against the Oath Keepers founder and the leader of its Florida chapter, the Justice Department has begun making a case against others affiliated with the group. Jennifer King on the defendants.
The four defendants charged with seditious conspiracy, obstruction, and other felonies are Joseph Hackett, Robert Menuta, David Morshall, and Edward Vallejo. The charges can carry a 20-year term. Hackett, Menuta, and Morshall were part of two groups that pushed into the Capitol in military-style stack formations. Vallejo called it a do-or-die situation. He's accused of helping coordinate the so-called quick reaction force teams in Virginia, ready to rush a cache of weapons into Washington if necessary. The weapons were never deployed. Jennifer King, Washington.
Meantime, Bradley Weeks of Florida has been convicted on a felony count of obstruction of an official proceeding, along with four misdemeanors. The 44-year-old faces up to 20 years in prison on the felony count. I'm Ben Thomas.
Girls and boys in poverty around the world are dreaming of a better life, filled with dance, art, music, and knowledge. They dream of a brighter future with enough nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn and grow, to get an education, escape poverty, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, such dreams are coming true. Together, we give children a chance to set their sights high and succeed in school and in life, by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and so much more, so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today. Together, we can help end poverty for good.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
Oh. We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Ready for our little forest adventure?
Yes!
There's a forest closer than you think. Find a park or forest near you and music inspired by nature at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by USDA Forest Service and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matinier with your headlines. The attack on the power grid in North Carolina has Wisconsin utility companies speaking out about their ability to respond to attacks on state facilities. 45,000 customers were without power last week after a targeted shooting in North Carolina. The company's still working to repair the damaged equipment. Federal authorities have been warning since 2020 the power grid is a potential target for extremists. Wisconsin Public Service reminded customers that the utility is taking every precaution and there are robust security measures physically and in cyberspace. They're asking customers to speak up if they see something happening near a substation, power plant, even at power poles or lines near homes and businesses. And if something doesn't seem right, contact the local police department. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
Radical bastards for opposing his pipe dream.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, you know, in Georgia for just about 2 weeks in the run-up to the runoff election, and you could see, you know, the wonders of Republican legislation in SB 202 and shortening the amount of time for the runoff down to, from 60 days down to 28. So they couldn't get that extra day in for the souls of the polls. Also, so you couldn't get new people to register. Also, hey, can't give that person a bottle of water standing in line for hours. That's a crime. Republicans, again, it's the whack-a-mole game. You go back to 2000, you know, the voting while black out of Florida. You go to 2004 with the caging. Every election cycle seems like there's a new gimmick. And this one is, well, SB 202, what they did in Georgia, making its way across the country. And I understand it's found its way to the Ohio legislature, which is why I've asked Katie Shanahan to come talk with us. Katie's an advisor with the Equal Districts Coalition. She's also with the group Innovation in Ohio, I believe. Katie, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, so in Ohio, we are in our lame duck session. The state legislators are winding up their last week and a half or so of this General Assembly, and they are spending a lot of their time pushing multiple pieces of legislation that would make it harder for certain folks to vote. They've got bills going in both the House and Senate that would do that. And then also a constitutional amendment that would actually gut a more than century-old right that we have as Ohioans to pass ballot initiatives to amend our constitutional amendment with just a simple majority vote. The proposal there, led by our chief elections officer, Secretary of State Frank LaRose, and Rep. Brian Stewart, would require a supermajority vote for constitutional amendments to pass. A clear response to folks signaling, actually just today officially, a desire to pass a ballot measure to protect abortion rights in Ohio's constitution, and also folks wanting to pass a real redistricting reform to create an independent redistricting commission. So two things that Republicans obviously see as a threat. So they're going after our chance to amend the constitution.
And who said the Republicans were lazy and do nothings?
That's right. They actually moved quite quickly. That constitutional amendment proposal actually got its first legislative hearing just 11 days ago, and it was already passed out of committee and could get a floor vote as soon as this week. So they move at lightning speed when they want to.
And I'm sure there was lots of opportunity for the public to weigh in. I'm sure there were lots of
sure.
people at the
yes.
hearings.
We
I'm sure there was a lot of input from the citizens of Ohio.
Yeah, I think for the two hearings where we got testimony opportunities, we got maybe 14 hours notice before each hearing to send in testimony. I think maybe in total 12 or 13 opponents got a chance to testify on it. There was just one proponent who managed to show up in person. Even Secretary LaRose couldn't manage to show up there in person to testify in favor of his own proposal.
And why should you have to when it's a rigged game from the start?
That's right. That's right. The legislature will have no problem getting, shouldn't have any problem getting a supermajority vote. They've gerrymandered their ways into supermajorities, which will get even bigger in the new General Assembly. So it's not too much of a feat for them to get supermajority support to get these things on the ballot.
But, so let's talk about that for a second, because the first one that you mentioned was the making it harder for citizens to come and creating this much higher bar. Mm-hmm. What do you say to the people who go, well, you know, it should be harder to amend the Constitution. We should have this higher bar, you know, because we don't want to just have this banana republic of people putting things in and all out. What's the argument against that?
I would say that for more than 100 years, this system has worked. Ohio voters are actually really good at saying no to proposals that we don't support or don't think would work for our state. In the last two decades, the vast majority of people-led constitutional amendments, so those are initiatives that get on the ballot after gathering hundreds of thousands of petition signatures across the state and going through a people-led effort rather than being passed through the legislature and then put onto the ballot directly. Most of those have actually gone down in defeat. So it's not as if special interests are running amok in our constitution. And actually just in 2015, Ohioans overwhelmingly supported a ballot measure that would specifically block special interests from being able to use the initiative process to amend our constitution. So we have safeguards in place. We've enjoyed the right to, by a simple majority, amend our constitution through ballot initiative since 1912. It is a century-old right that we as Ohioans have enjoyed. And the shift in it now is explained by nothing other than the fact that Republican politicians in this state do not like it when voters tell them what to do. We told them to draw fair maps. They ignored us. We elected a Democratic majority on the state board of education. They're now gutting that body's authority to oversee education in the state. And now they want to block our ability to use ballot initiatives to make decisions about our own political future.
But Republicans love the people.
Well, they say that often.
See, because, but here's the thing. I mean, there were all those times and, you know, all those times when the citizens abused that right. And they put all that weird stuff into your constitution because you got a weird constitution, right?
Yes, we do have a weird constitution. Look, there's one example that the Republican supporters of this bill keep coming back to. And it's when Ohioans passed actually two different constitutional reforms that put physical addresses of casinos into our state constitution. Speaking just on my own behalf, I personally don't disagree that those things shouldn't be in our state constitution, but I'm also old enough to remember that there was no coordinated Republican effort to oppose those issues getting passed the two times we had to go to the ballot. So, you know, that's the one example that they can point to. And then they ignore the fact that in 2015, we then passed an explicit ban on special interests being able to be protected through constitutional language to rush past this and to suggest that they're doing this to protect, I guess, ourselves from our own decisions. It's really paternalistic when you think about it.
Well, I mean, you know, because we know what you women are going to do.
Well,
you're,
yes.
You're going to put that A thing in your constitution, and you can't
That's
be
right.
You can't be trusted with your own body.
No, of course we can't. Of course we can't. Yeah, no, it's really frustrating to hear, of course, Secretary LaRose, who himself helped his Republican colleagues cement their own party's special interests by ignoring the will of Ohioans and our constitutional reforms to get fair maps, to illegally rig our maps in his favor, in his party's favor, now tell us that we need to be protected against using the Constitution, which is one of the last remaining ways that we as people in Ohio can actually make our voices heard about the direction of our state and to enact policy and protections into our constitution that clearly Republican leadership doesn't want us to have, but which the vast majority of Ohioans actually support, which is true for both things like protecting access to abortion and also our desire for fair maps.
Wow. It's crazy. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Katie Shanahan. She's an advisor with the Equal Districts Coalition. You can check out their website, equaldistricts.com. We'll get links out on social media how you can do that. Now, that's not the only piece. The other one is this voter suppression bill, this HB 294. This one's the one that's kind of, I've heard it's the Alec bill. It's kind of just like the
yes.
one SB 202. It's like what they're trying to do in Texas and then other places. This is the model legislation. It's just that Ohio, really ambitious, moving this along really quickly.
Yeah, and I'll say too, you know, what's encompassed in this bill is actually just making our current system, which is already bad, even worse. In a lot of ways, I call Ohio a canary in the coal mine when it comes to voter suppression. We're often overlooked in discussions about voter suppression. There's a lot of attention, deservedly so, on especially the South and how hard Republicans work there to disenfranchise voters. But a lot of those bills that were passing, for example, in Georgia, you know, closing down early vote locations and other restrictions, they were passing things that were already on the books for us in Ohio for years. So we're essentially just making our situation worse. The bill would decrease the access to ballot drop boxes, something that county boards of election are actually legally allowed to put anywhere within their county. We had multiple judicial opinions ruling as such in 2020 when Secretary LaRose was fervently fighting against putting up more drop boxes, which at the height of the pandemic would have been super helpful. But this now restricts just one ballot drop box to be at the board of elections, which is just, you know, nonsensical. It would decrease the ability for folks to actually cure or fix their ballot if they, for example, forgot to sign it or forgot to put the date on it or forgot to mark some box. There's a certain amount of time that they're allowed to come back in and fix that. This would decrease their ability to do that. It would cut early voting hours. So we have the right to vote on the Monday before the Tuesday election day. They're getting rid of that Monday. And then rather than dispersing those hours onto the weekends or at night when it would make sense, they just redistributed them to Monday through Friday during traditional daytime work hours, which obviously is not accessible for a lot of folks. And other provisions that, like I said, would make it harder for certain voters, particularly Black and brown voters, student voters, rural voters and elderly voters to cast their ballot. And this actually is moving in tandem with another bill over on the Senate side, which has a lot of the same provisions, but goes even further with a strict voter ID provision to require photo ID for all voters. It's one of the strictest voter ID pieces of legislation in the country moving at the moment. So busy times down at the State House working to undermine our democracy.
See, I'm waiting for the day where they go, you know, never mind with the voter IDs. We're just going to implant chips. We're just going to start implanting people or give barcodes.
Maybe one step too far. Yeah.
You know, or something, you know, RFID yeah. chips in your hand or something. I'm waiting for that to be the next bar because it seems like every election cycle, they come up with new and creative ways to suppress mm-hmm. people's ability to access the ballot box and That's new right. and impressive ways to use our court system to help to aid and abet. And I look at what's going on in North Carolina with this Moore case. How much of what is before the Supreme Court could affect Ohio or Georgia or Texas or even where I'm at in Pennsylvania?
Sure. So there's two ways that it could affect us here in Ohio. The first is how it could affect everybody because it would be a huge upending of essentially how our three branches of government function when it comes to dealing with election law, but also keeping legislators in check so that they're not overrunning their authority to pass rules and regulations about the time, manner, and place of elections, both at the state level, but also at the federal level for congressional races and other federal races. But it would also impact how redistricting happens for congressional districts. If the U.S. Supreme Court goes the most conservative route, it would empower only state legislators with the authority to pass any regulation or to do anything essentially in the field of federal elections that includes redistricting without any checks by a governor's veto or even state courts. Like I said, that's the most conservative view of the independent state legislature theory. It's really important to note that up until a few years ago, this was an incredibly sort of universally understood radical legal theory that should have been laughed out of court. It's a statement in and of itself that's quite appalling that the U.S. Supreme Court even granted cert to hear this case. I don't think that they'll go the most conservative route, but even going any other step would block, for example, potentially people's ability to have independent redistricting commissions. If they read it to say only legislators themselves, literally state legislators, are allowed to draw congressional districts, that would shift how a lot of states operate. But it would also shield them from being able to have folks use their state courts as a check on how their state legislators are engaging in imposing election law or in drawing congressional districts. Especially here in Ohio, we of course have been saved by having a court that rightly read what the Constitution required in terms of what our districts had to look like at the state legislative and congressional level and tried to hold our legislative branch accountable when they passed multiple versions of illegally gerrymandered maps without having any of that sort of check. We could see much worse maps get passed and just reckless abandon in terms of how Republicans would act in terms of regulating our elections. So it would be a huge shift in how we engage in this process. It would take a lot of protection that we have to fight against voter suppression efforts. And then here with Ohio specifically, our legislative leaders actually appealed a state court decision overruling their latest congressional map as an illegal partisan gerrymander to the U.S. Supreme Court, essentially attaching their wagon to this North Carolina case, saying, we understand you might need to decide that first, but we also would like to say that the legislature has much broader authority here, and the court essentially can't tell us no when we want to draw maps however we want to draw them.
Now, isn't it amazing what used to be considered kookery just a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
Now has wiggled its way into mainstream thought. I mean, we had that little January 6th thing based on some kookery, and now I've got people saying, no, that's sound legal doctrine. No, it's kookery. But sadly, we've got a Trump court.
It is. Well, and at the heart of it is, you know, this overturning of federalism, which until recently was actually a bedrock of conservative legal approach, just empowering state courts to be the final arbiter, the final say-so of what state law means, how to interpret their own state constitution. And the suggestion here is actually no, it should only be the legislators who get the final say, which again is just such a radical departure for how our democracy functions.
Oh boy, 2023 is going to be a fun and interesting year. But Katie,
it'll
appreciate you taking time for us, filling us in. We will be keeping an eye on just how bad Ohio gets. I don't know, it'll get much worse, but it could.
You never know.
don't make the challenge, Rick. Don't do it. Katie Shanahan, thanks so much. Appreciate the time.
Thank you, Rick.
Good stuff. Katie's an advisor with Equal Districts Coalition. Check out their website, equaldistricts.com. We'll get links out on social media. I can take a look at that. Right back with your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1947. That was the day that the United Mine Workers leader John L. Lewis wrote the AFL stating, "We disaffiliate." Lewis had had a stormy history with the American Federation of Labor. He was central to the 1935 split that soon led to the founding of the Congress of Industrial Organizations. By 1942, he led the United Mine Workers out of the CIO. Reasons included disagreements over labor's relationship to President Roosevelt and U.S. entry into World War II and the running of the CIO itself. For a brief time, the United Mine Workers reaffiliated with the AFL. But by the fall of 1947, Lewis found himself in fundamental disagreement with the Federation over its response to the recently passed Taft-Hartley Act. At the October AFL convention, the discussion centered on the signing of anti-communist affidavits as required by Taft-Hartley. Lewis was virtually alone in his refusal to comply with the act. He noted that the act would have been stillborn if labor leaders had stood tall and refused to sign the affidavits. Further, he said, quote, "This act is a trap, a pitfall for organizations of labor. This act was passed to oppress labor, to make difficult its current enterprises for collective bargaining, to make more difficult the securing of new members for this labor movement, without which our movement will become so possessed of inertia that there is no action and growth. In a labor movement where there is no growth, there is no security for its existence, because deterioration sets in and unions, like men, retrograde." Despite the split, the United Mine Workers would remain a powerful, independent union for more than 40 years.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
One 866 416 Rick. 1-866-416-7425. You got a thought, question, comment? Want to hear it? Interesting a story coming out of the New York Times. Evidently, the last Confederate statue in Richmond, Virginia, doth been removed. Ambrose P. Hill, a Confederate lieutenant general, who had been memorialized, his thing's gonna be transferred, I guess, to a cemetery. You know, I got to tell you, we're the only country in the world, and this is one of those amazing things to me. And it has always been amazing to me. This isn't new. This isn't, you know, Johnny Come Lately. This is one of those things that, eighth grade history class, you know, we were getting ready to go to Washington, D.C. on our class trip. And we're going to, you know, go and talk about battles and go to Arlington and all of this stuff. I remember going, you know, why is it that we even talk about the Confederates? They were traitors. How is it that there were, you know, any memorials, any bit of you know, General Lee was a great general? No. You know, how is it we didn't execute all that? You look at what's going on over in Germany. There was evidently a coup attempt, you know, an attempt to overthrow the government there. They rounded everybody up, did it within days. Here, the people who tried to overthrow our government, well, you know, they're spinning their own tail. We're letting them write the history. I mean, that's... you go, well, that's what makes America great. No, that's not what makes us. I'm waiting for a moment where we're going to go, we're going to make America great again. Oh, wait a minute. There is that moment. I was going to say, I'm waiting for the moment where people are going, no, we're going to make America great again. We're going to, but yeah, they're already trying that. How crazy. And here's the thing, you know, again, these people have infiltrated every bit of our government. You remember back when the HUAC committee back during the McCarthy years with the communists are everywhere. Well, we're finding out, you know, the Oath Keepers, the white supremacists, the radicals, they literally are everywhere. A new report out by the Project on Government Oversight, POGO. They have listed a list of Oath Keeper membership list. More than 300 of them who have worked at DHS, Department of Homeland Security, Secret Service, Border Patrol, well entrenched in our law enforcement. And you wonder, you kind of wonder, you know, how is it possible we have so many people, you know, sympathizing with people who tried to overthrow our government? I mean, this is the part that I'm still kind of struggling with. You know, January 6th, we all watched it with our eyes. You got Elon Musk now with his Twitter files, and you got all those little reporters making money off of, hey, follow me and listen to my podcast, and where I'm gonna explain to you all of the conspiracy theories that we're making up in real time, because the executives at Twitter were actually trying to figure out how to deal with a president using their platform to overthrow our government. I gotta tell you, you know what would have been a scandal? A scandal would have been if you'd opened up all their emails and all their communications and there was nothing. The scandal would have been if they were, oh, I don't know, involved in making it happen. But the fact that they were genuinely struggling with how to not have someone use their platform to overthrow our country, I got to tell you, I don't find that to be conspiratorial at all. But the right wing is going to spin this, because they're writing the history as we speak. They're spinning this in their narrative, which is they're the victims. You know, we talk about this all the time. You hear these January 6th criminals talking about, oh, the prisons are so bad. These are the same people who were just a year before that were going, you know, prisoners aren't harsh enough. We give them cable TV and swimming pools. And you've heard it. Now they're whining and complaining because prison's hard. I remember, they were the ones who were advocating that prison should be much harder. And I got to tell you, I don't advocate for abusing people, but I do wish prison was as hard as they wanted it to be. I want that for them. I want them to experience how hard it should be in their minds, how hard prison should be for, in what they believe. Well, I guess it is what it is. Anyway, let me finish up this hour with Frank sent me an email. He said, in regard to your show today, I just wish carmaker Musk would take care of his workers like Henry Ford did and not like some old robber barons did back in the Gilded Age. I agree with you. It's not so much about red or blue. It's more about green for the workers. Cheers and happy holidays. Thank you, Frank. I appreciate the well wish. Look, Henry Ford was no great guy. Henry Ford was a businessman. Henry Ford paid his workers to buy his products. He knew if they couldn't afford them, nobody could. So he was acting in his best interest. He was a horrible person. Don't get me wrong. He was a major robber baron. He had, you know, loyalty pledges, and they used to do inspections in people's homes. If you weren't leading the kind of life that he believed, you were then shunned. There are lots of stories on how bad, Henry Ford was. Maybe he wasn't near as bad as the rest of them. I'm not going as far to say that, but maybe not. But I think we're seeing this. And I think I'm with you, Frank. I wish he would treat people better. It's not going to happen. When you give them the kind of power and control and the wealth and the ability to make people's lives miserable, they're going to. When you give them the ability unchecked to just fire people, we're gonna fire all you, we're bringing in robots. How dare you ask for minimum wages? How dare you ask for health care, sick days? If you remember me saying this a while ago, this is what the railroads are creating. The railroads are trying to make those engineer jobs so unbearable that everyone leaves and they get to throw up their hands and go, we can't find anyone to do these jobs. We've got to automate them. Mark it on a calendar. I said it today. Because it's what they're moving towards. It's what all these criminals are moving towards. And the sooner we wake up and stop making heroes out of the Musks of the world, the better off we're going to all be. The sooner we start saying we got to rely on each other instead of the benevolence of some dictator, I think the better off we're going to be. Just my thought. I want to hear yours. Like Frank, you can send me an email, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally, and I do read.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.